Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 103 for August 5th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes...
I liken this to being a little boy in a sweet shop, really, Mark, and it's somewhat hard to know where to look.
That's Nick Morgan, the man in charge of Diageo's premium whiskeys, and the man who plays a big role in deciding what gets released each year as part of the classic malts range. More with Nick later, but first, let's look at the news. One of the ongoing stories the last couple of months has been the massive investment in new facilities to meet the growing global demand for whiskey. Dewar's is the latest to jump in. Its parent company, Bacardi, announced plans this past week to spend $250 million over the next 10 years in Scotland. The current Dewar's production facility near Glasgow will get new maturation warehouses, bottling and packaging equipment, and a new blending center. And Bacardi is also looking at a site in central Scotland to house more warehouses and a second blending center. Jim Beam is teaming up with its Northeast U.S. wholesaler, Southern Wine and Spirits, again this year to raise money for the kids of New York City firefighters. 5,600 cases of specially labeled Jim Beam bourbon are available now at retailers in New York and parts of New Jersey and Connecticut. A portion of the sales will be donated to the Terry Farrell Firefighters Scholarship Fund, which provides scholarships for the children of active, retired, and fallen New York City firefighters. This year's special bottle features a firefighter's helmet where the Jim Beam logo normally goes, and the number 343. That represents the 343 New York City firefighters killed in the World Trade Center attacks. If you're traveling through New York on an international flight, you can take part as well. The special bottles are available at the duty-free shops at Kennedy, Newark, and LaGuardia airports. Last year, Scotland's West End Turnberry Resort celebrated its 100th anniversary and had a special bottling of Glenfiddich produced to celebrate the occasion. It turns out that there are 50 numbered bottles left for purchase through the hotel. The whiskey was distilled back in 1977, and the vintage was picked to celebrate the Open Championship at Turnberry that year, with the famous duel between Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson. The price for the Turnberry Centenary Glenfiddich Private Vintage Single Malt starts at around £395, or $800, depending on the number of the individual bottle. There's a link to the Westin Turnberry's website at the WhiskeyCast website. And while I'm talking about whiskey and golf, two of my favorite things, Brooklady has released two more editions in its Lynx series, which honors some of the world's great golf courses with paintings on the tin. This year's Open was played at Carnoustie, and the Carnoustie Lynx is a 14-year-old aged in bourbon casks with additional time in French Allier oak. Last year's Ryder Cup was played at the K Club near Dublin, and the K Club Lynx is also 14 years old, matured in bourbon casks, with additional time in French oak casks from Côte Rôtie and Hermitage. No word on what the boys will pick for the next course to be honored, but there's a little course down the road from here that I think ought to be at the top of the list. You might have heard of it, Pine Valley. Of course, I've never played it. From the Clarifications and Corrections Department now, my interview with Ian Henderson in episode number 101 brought a quick response from some of the folks in the Blaidnock Distillery website's forum, including one John McDougall. You may recall that Ian said the stills at Laphroaig were out of balance when he arrived, which was sometime after John had served as distillery manager at Laphroaig. And by out of balance, that means a different number of wash stills and spirit stills. He also said the still house had been expanded after John's tenure at Laphroaig. Now, while I wasn't able to get John on the phone to get his response in person, he did post his comments on the Blaidnock site's forum, and I've included a link to that on the WhiskeyCast website. John says the still house was expanded while he was at Laphroaig to the same levels that Ian found it at, along with the brewing and fermenting section, and production capacity doubled at Laphroaig as a result. Finally, to quote John directly, he doesn't recall the spirit particularly suffering due to the out-of-balance operation of the stills, and says Laphroaig's sales for the last 33 years can back that up. By the way, if you'd like to spend a few days with John McDougall at Blaidnock, there are still openings for this fall's Wild Scotsman Whiskey School, October 11th through the 14th. Contact Jeff Topping at the Wild Scotsman website for details, and be sure to tell him you heard about it here on WhiskeyCast. other events coming up between now and then. Whiskey Fringe in Edinburgh is August 18th and 19th. Australia's Malt Whiskey Convention runs from August 24th through the 26th in Melbourne. The Brandy Library in New York City has Spirit School sessions on scotches August 28th and September 18th. The Loch Lomond Food and Drink Festival at Balloch Castle is September 7th through the 9th. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival in Bardstown runs from September 12th through the 16th. And the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival will be in Dufftown September 23rd through the 25th. There's a complete list of whiskey events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. A few weeks ago, we heard from Diageo's Nick Morgan about the Classic Malts cruise held last month along the Scottish coast. But Nick and I talked about more than just the cruise. He's the global marketing director for Diageo's premium malt whiskies. That gives him a pretty good handle on the worldwide whiskey market, and it's where we'll pick up the conversation.
Obviously, there is, from my personal view, I would say a mixture of huge excitement at the opportunity that the Asian markets and China in particular present to the Scotch whiskey industry. And at the same time, obviously, and quite rightly, there are some concerns about whether we're in a good position to meet those demands should they actually materialize, because at the moment it's projections, it's not real numbers on the table. And I think everyone's trying to put their own house in order to ensure that they are in a position to meet these demands. And as you'll know, I think you spoke to my colleague Peter Smith a few weeks ago about the new distillery that we'll be building at Rose Isle, which is partly there to meet these potential forecasts.
Is it the same with India as well? I know that's a touchy subject these days.
I don't think India is a very touchy subject. I think India is probably – people talk about India as being one of the great potential markets for Scotch whiskey. Of course, it is the biggest whiskey market in the world, I believe. The fact that not a great deal of Scotch is drunk there is just a reflection on the current circumstances in terms of tariffs and the like. I think if India opens up, it will be a huge opportunity. Scotch whiskey has such a great reputation there. Its quality is fully understood by consumers. And personally, as I'm enchanted by Indian culture, I can't wait for the situation to change so that we can do a lot more business there.
I have to ask, when you pick a dram out of everything Diageo has, you've got access to the entire stock. What do you pick?
Yeah, well, it's like being, I liken this to being a little boy in a sweet shop, really, Mark. And it's somewhat hard to know where to look. But I have to say, I'm like everyone else. I like to experiment, but I like to come home to some favorite whiskies as well. And my palate is a little on the coarse side, I sometimes think. So I tend to find greater pleasure in the more heavily peated whiskies than I do in the more delicate and sometimes more complex Highland and Speyside makes. So I would, as anyone knows me, I would not be telling a lie if I said I was very fond of Talisker, very fond of Kalila, and also, when I can get it, very fond of Brora as well.
And you have access to Brora occasionally, right?
We do. We bottle it in very small quantities as part of our special releases program. At the moment, that really only goes to Europe. I don't think we've brought any into the United States yet.
What's coming up in the future? What special bottlings are you working on these days that you can talk about? What can we look forward to?
Well, we're just about to – our annual program is released in September each year. So we're putting out a few interesting ones this year, and I would say probably amongst those, we have a truly spectacular 21-year-old Lagavulin. It really is a wonderful whiskey, and certainly we give, I won't name them, but we give samples out to very well-known writers to help us develop our tasting notes. And they're normally, I think, always very pleased to see a parcel of Diageo samples dropping through their door, but certainly this year, the Lagavulin 21-year-old has earned great, great response from these guys. And having tasted it myself, And also we had it lined up in the tastings we did at Lagavulin on the Isla Whiskey Festival. I can say the response to it has been fantastic. And some of that will be coming into the United States.
I don't think we can wait. Anything else that you can, besides the 21-year-old Lagavulin that's coming up on that list?
Well, on the list, I don't think it's coming to the United States, Mark, but certainly in Europe, we've got a lovely Rosebank, which we haven't bottled for a long time. Obviously, given what I said earlier, this is a somewhat more delicate and subtle bottling than the sorts of whiskies that I normally favor, but I've always been very fond of Rosebank, and this is a very, very nice example. Then alongside that, we've got a fantastic Talisker 25 and also a Talisker 30-year-old. So quite a range for those people who can manage to get access to them.
How do you decide which whiskies come to the U.S., which whiskies stay in Europe, which ones go to Asia? What's the what goes into those decisions?
Well, it's in terms of the United States, we discuss what is in our program each year. And our colleagues that are responsible for sales and marketing across the pond then decide which best suit their objectives and which they feel they can put out to their mainly specialist trade most effectively. So it's really, although all of these products are allocated back here in London, we don't make a policy about not allowing stuff to come into the United States. It's down to our colleagues to say what they really want. In terms of Asia, almost none of these special bottlings go into Asia at the moment. A few go into Japan. So it's principally between Europe and North America.
The other question I've got is about the Singleton range.
Yes.
Because I had the chance to try the Singleton of Glendolen. That's turned out to be quite an interesting branding experiment for you. If I'm wrong on saying that, please correct me. But it seems like you've created a good little brand there.
Well, I think we have. You're probably aware that Singleton is a trademark that we've owned for a long time, and it was sitting upon a shelf and hadn't really been used since the late 1990s. We had a view that we wanted to try and bring a malt whiskey to the market that would satisfy a range of slightly different sort of palates in terms of national preference for styles of whiskey. But the one thing we wanted to keep in common was that we had something that was fairly accessible from a taste profile, certainly not too extreme, and also really sort of rounded and well-balanced, the sort of whiskies that people might find very approachable. We launched the first Singleton distillery variant in Taiwan, and that's Singleton of Glen Ord. And then such was the interest actually within the business that we found we needed to come up with an expression for the United States and for Europe. So we developed Singleton of Glendolen for the United States, where it's currently being tested, and Singleton of Dufton for Europe, where it's also being tested. What unites these three brands, obviously, apart from the Singleton overarching name, is the, if I may say so, the fantastic packaging they've got, which really sets them apart, I think, from a lot of other brands on the market. And also they are united in that they have, within certain parameters, similar taste profile. At the moment, I'm delighted to say, although we're in the early stages of these brands, they're all going pretty well, and there seems to be very strong consumer interest in them.
The other thing I've noticed is that none of the three appears to really have been put out much as a single malt before.
Well, that's correct. I mean, people who are knowledgeable about single malts will have heard of all of these names in the past. And Dufton was sold as a single malt for a while in the UK when the distillery was owned by Arthur Bells and Son. Glendolen was sold for a little while as a sort of individual malt in France. Glen Ord has been sold in Europe and a little in the United States. But really, they had no great market presence as distillery-only brands, and that's why we felt comfortable putting them under the Singleton overarching brand.
It wouldn't make sense, for instance, to do a Singleton of Lagavulin because then it would compete with the existing Lagavulin brand.
I would simply say it would not make a lot of sense to do a Singleton of Lagavulin, not at all.
You'll find a link to the Classic Malts website at the WhiskeyCast website. And before I wrap things up, there are a couple of new whiskey podcasts that you might be interested in checking out. Inverhouse Distillers has produced a series of podcasts focusing on its Annock single malt, featuring discussions with its distillers, and also whiskey Bible author Jim Murray. Also, you might find the Scotch Cast interesting. It's a monthly podcast where the hosts taste and score two whiskeys each month. But what makes it interesting is that they tell you ahead of time what they'll be tasting so that you can get a bottle and taste along with them. You can find both podcasts through the iTunes Music Store or other podcast directories. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.